Welcome to Encore, brought to you each week by BoomersWork.com. I'm Costas Halavrezos. The Ivany Report warns that Nova Scotia hovers on the brink of an extended period of decline with two related factors, a shrinking, aging population and very low rates of economic growth. It urged companies and citizens to become more aggressive about seizing economic opportunities. Our guest today urges greater openness to innovation and risk. Dr. Marco Navarro-Genie is president and CEO of the Atlantic Institute for Market Studies in Halifax, a nonpartisan, not-for-profit research and educational institution. Dr. Navarro-Genie, welcome to Encore.
Thank you. Good morning.
The Ivany Report focused on Nova Scotia, but could its analysis and recommendations equally apply to all three maritime provinces?
Absolutely. One of the things that that happened when I started at Ames and I came to Atlantic Canada, the Ivany Report had been published soon thereafter. And as I was doing my travels around the region, meeting people, they kept asking me about the Ivany Report. People understood and seized that the logic that applies in Ivany really applies to, and I would say perhaps even to Newfoundland and to the entire Atlantic region, but in particular, certainly to the Maritimes.
Do you think the situation is as dire as the Ivany Report suggests?
Yes, and in fact, it has probably gotten worse in the sense that since the Ivany Report was published, we have heard from Statistics Canada that in all three maritime provinces, we now have more people dying than being born, for example. That is a point that is not irreversible, but it is certainly an issue considering that in order to maintain economies, in order to grow economies, you have to have a sustainable population.
What about the role of immigration?
The role of immigration, of course, has been an important thing throughout the history of this country. We have not been all that successful at retaining immigrants in Atlantic Canada. This is part of the problem. Bringing people here isn't very difficult. I look out the window and see, why would you not want to live here? So it's easy to attract people, but the issue has been retaining them. And so I suspect, for example, even now with the works of the Ivany Report, there are some measures and some efforts being made into devising strategies to retain immigrants. And so that really has to be the key.
Now, you say that Nova Scotia must compete not just with the other Atlantic provinces or the other Canadian provinces, but with the world. Is that a rather tall order for any one of these three small provinces?
I think that we have to stop referring to ourselves as small. Small is as small does, to paraphrase Forrest Gump. Really, the issue here is that we live in a world in which know-how and innovation are the order of the day. And you don't have to be 300 pounds or 150 pounds to think well. So size doesn't really matter to some extent. I understand the argument about scales. But when it comes to ideas and innovation, when it comes to universities, when it comes to creativity, it really doesn't matter how big or how small we are. There are jurisdictions, for example, around the world. If you think about places like Singapore or Hong Kong, which are essentially microstates, who have done extremely well. I know that they have different conditions to the ones that we have. But what I'm saying is that there are examples there that we ought to perhaps look at closely and emulate.
Now, I recently interviewed Jim Hanlon, who's the CEO of the Institute for Ocean Research Enterprise in Halifax. He was talking how Nova Scotia is in the vanguard internationally on a lot of ocean research and developments there. But that's not a conspicuous industry. I mean, it doesn't have three or four smokestacks and thousands of people streaming in and out of one factory. Could we be missing, are we unaware of some of those new industries that could be the great job spinners of the future?
We certainly are in some respects. For example, there are pockets in the region, in Atlantic Canada, in Nova Scotia, in New Brunswick to some extent, where there are focuses of innovation, startup companies. There's lots of energy and lots of creativity being exerted on the economy. The question is, how do we do more of that? And in order to do more of that, what we really don't need is to throw more money at people to come. More subsidies to businesses, more subsidies to companies. What we really need is to create the right amount of incentives and the correct is the word, containment culture, if you will, to be able to attract people. People won't come here because we have free dental care for 14-year-olds. In fact, the vast majority of the people who are leaving our provinces are locals. They're going to other jurisdictions to look for work. And the jurisdictions that they're going to don't have free medical care for 14-year-olds. That signals to me that those policies are not exactly what are going to keep people here. And let's look at it in reverse. People are leaving because they want jobs. People are leaving because they want to offer their families some kind of prosperity and some kind of future. And it seems to me that that's what we ought to be looking at. And therefore, the issue here is to be able to develop the economic conditions to attract and keep people here.
Well, again, we're interested in a sustainable economy and one that that grows and spins out into new areas. And most of that group that's left over the past decade has been going simply to, you know, this great pole of the boom, the economic boom in Alberta and some of the other western provinces. Now that it's suddenly gone bust, you know, you have a lot of people who've become used to a certain level of income and who may have been, you know, remitting money back home in the meantime to families. But it doesn't seem to make for a very stable economy if, you know, the next boom occurs in some other province. And suddenly, you know, a lot of skilled or even unskilled people start heading there.
There is no perfectly stable economy. By nature, economies tend to go up and down. But if you asked me, if I were to choose between having an economy that goes up and down and one that is completely flatlined, I think I would probably choose the one that goes up and down, because at least there are apps to enjoy. We do have what is happening out west is going to have an impact on us. It's going to have an impact on us because we know that there are thousands and thousands of Atlantic Canadians that have moved west to work. And now that work is drying up. So what is going to happen is, as you pointed out, those remittances are not coming or not in the same amounts. The other problem, of course, is that as the economic slowdown out west deepens and is likely to for, they say, at least another year, those people are going to start coming back. And these are Atlantic Canadians that are coming back with perhaps a little bit of money, but no jobs. They have not necessarily contributed it proportionately to all the services, but now they're bringing back their families and they're bringing back themselves. And they're coming to, if you will, tax the social safety net. They're going to put their children in schools. They're going to want to go to hospitals. So this essentially accentuates the problems that we already have.
You're listening to Encore, sponsored by BoomersWork.com. I'm Costas Halavrazos. If you're retired or approaching retirement and looking for part-time employment, or if you're an employer seeking experienced workers, BoomersWork.com can connect you. Just go to the homepage of BoomersWork.com. My guest on this week's edition of Encore is Dr. Marco Navarro-Genie, President and CEO of the Atlantic Institute of Market Studies. Now, you did mention the word innovation, and both business and government talk a good game about innovation being the key to improve prosperity. But in fact, what do the actions of both the public and the private sectors in this region really indicate?
There is a desire to have innovation because we have identified innovation as being essentially a key part of the mix in making economies grow. But we're not entirely sure, it seems to me, that we understand how it works because innovation does not work on command. We have sometimes government policies that seem to want to direct that innovation. which by definition, therefore, isn't innovation.
Some of these incubation centers, things like that?
Yes, but we also build policies around that essentially strangle innovation or new ideas.
How so?
Take, for example, this thing that is taking the world by storm called Uber, the taxi service. We are adamantly opposed to it here, whether it's the politicians and the public. We don't really understand it to begin with. But that's innovation. It's one of the most innovative things that have happened in the last 15 years or so. If you take something like Airbnb, which is the service that connects people who have space available at home and people who are looking for space at a place to stay, which essentially is unlocking value in people's property that is already there but it's not being used. That's a highly innovative invention of lately, and there are already spin-offs that are coming out from it. But we wanna keep a lid on it, and we want to control it. So we want innovation on the one hand, but we are also afraid of the things that innovation bring. And I think it's that fear that we have to keep in check.
What about our private sector companies? And some of them are multinationals based in the Maritimes. Have they been investing enough of their own money in R&D compared to other jurisdictions?
No. In fact, Canada is lagging in its investment in research and development among the industrialized states. But when we look at the country as a whole, in Atlantic Canada, companies invest even less in research and development. And so this is something that we need to address. At the same time, there are things that are connected to it. We have higher levels of taxation, so there is less disposable income for companies, for example, to invest in research. And ultimately, also the margins, perhaps, of profits here in a smaller scale economy are also smaller, and therefore there is less available income to do that.
But we've just gone through a period, and we're still in it, but we might be heading out of it soon with, you know, very low interest rates. And the companies that still have been profitable through that period, you know, have been able to amass some profits. But very often it's more attractive now to go and buy up another company rather than to develop some new process or some new line of products with the money you have. Is that something that gets in the way of the kind of innovation we need?
No, it's fostering innovation by a different arm, in a sense, because what you're doing, you're still rewarding innovation by acquiring and developing and making it grow, presumably from there. What it does signal, though, is that oftentimes those companies that we acquire are elsewhere outside the region, and that makes economic sense to the extent to which the economy here needs to grow and isn't growing because we don't have enough people, we don't have enough labor, we don't have enough of the things that you need to grow an economy. So you need to go and acquire these things elsewhere. But they do bring money to the economy. The key is, and what we got to think next is, how do we make those branches and those budding businesses and ideas come and be generated right here?
Can you see the day when companies would simply say no thanks, when government is offering incentives?
In principle, I suppose I do. And we got to start somewhere. We got to start with the principle. We have to start with the principle that when we receive public money just because we can, we are not doing ourselves much of a favor. We reduce our productivity, we reduce our competitiveness, and in fact, we end up hurting ourselves, as well as hurting the pockets of those who contribute to it.
Dr. Navarro-Gini, thank you very much for coming in today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I've been speaking with Dr. Marco Navarro-Gini, President and CEO of the Atlantic Institute for Market Studies, a not-for-profit research and educational institution in Halifax. You've been listening to Encore, sponsored by BoomersWork.com. If you're retired and looking for part-time employment, or if you're an employer seeking experienced workers, BoomersWork.com can connect you. Just go to the homepage of BoomersWork.com. Each week at this time, BoomersWork.com brings you Encore. We'll introduce you to men and women exploring the opportunities and the challenges of special interest to the growing number of Canadians aged 50 and over. I'm Costas Halavrezos. Have a great day.